Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, darling. Okay, I'm just going to put
Good morning. How are you?
Grace, I must admit this episode is late because I've been up a mountain in Spain on a retreat, on a holistic.
Yeah,
I've been filling my soul. So if I'm honest with you, and Twitter has gone off, but you're not doing the final episode. I've been coming each week for your wisdom, people have been saying. I say that with my tongue firmly in my cheek, as I learned to do on the meditation retreat. It's very useful to kind of open the whole mouth and get the breathing space opening. And I'm like, oh, sorry, guys. Yes, I know. I am doing it. It's just a bit late. So I'm delighted, first of all, Grace, to tell you there's a demand for this show and some people will be listening.
Good. Finally a demand for something I'm doing. I found my target demographic after all these years.
Grace, I think you should consider a And Just Like That song, because I think people are... You know, there are people...
A song. I think there's an opera in it. There's a musical in it.
Yeah. I mean, there are literally single figures of people on Twitter saying, where's the episode? And so I'm just suggesting, if you... Have you thought about doing Carrie Bradshaw the musical?
And oh, I think many you should times. Pay the title many role. Times. Well, And Just Like That, my career changed.
Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist Watchers at Just Like That, the Sex and the City Reheal, with me, Deborah Frances White, and my very special guest, Grace Petrie. Episode 10, Seeing the Light.
So, if you're listening at home, can I just say, or anywhere you are, in the park, in a submarine, if you're listening... we're sorry we haven't got this out sooner, but it's because I've been getting whole up a mountain. And I'll admit to you, Grace, after the fullness of experience I've had, this feels, I'm going to put it out there, a little trivial, because I've been dealing with the universe.
The big questions of life, yeah. Well, you've been going up a mountain filling your soul, and I have been cramming watching this show in preparation for doing this. So I feel very much like I've been emptying my soul of pretty much all substance.
Have you binged? Have you binged?
Yeah, I mean, I tried.
I'm not sure it's meant to be binged. I think it's like eating a whole birthday cake.
So I have been immensely busy over the last few months, and I haven't listened to any of this series because I haven't watched any of the show yet.
No one wants to hear your excuses.
So yesterday I was like, oh, okay, there's 10 episodes, I'll do the whole thing. Well, I was not prepared whatsoever for the bereavement that was coming in the first episode.
What?
And my girlfriend...
You hadn't heard any spoilers. You hadn't any jokes about Big dying in a Peloton.
Dude, I had heard, right, I'd heard the opposite of spoilers, right? I feel actually quite, like, annoyed about this because, obviously, dreadful allegations came out about Chris Noth, right? And then in all of the surrounding, like, response to that, the show was like, and just like that announced, Chris Noth will not be featured in series two because of these allegations. So when he started having a heart attack, I was like, well, there's no way he's going to die because I already read 2 months ago that they announced that he wasn't coming back in series two. So I was completely unprepared. And like, I remember like there was all this buzz around the Peloton. The two things I remember when it came out, when it aired, on Twitter, there was a load of stuff about Carrie asking Big to masturbate and how grim it was. And then loads of people saying shares in Peloton have gone through the floor after this episode.
So you thought he wanked on a Peloton?
So I thought he wanked on the Peloton. That's like what I had sort of, in my mind, I'd like amalgamated the two stories. And I was like, and it really looked like it was, when you watch it through that lens, it looked like it was going that way because he was going on about how hot the instructor was. And I was like, oh, I see what's going to happen. She's going to start the class going. He's going to start wanking. I guess we'll all have a laugh. And then instead, my girlfriend came downstairs and like came in and found me literally like racked with sobs, surrounded by tissues, like crying my heart out over the fictional death of a character I hated, played by a man who, by all accounts, is terrible. So, you know.
The things
we do for art.
This is the greatest episode of this or any Sex and the City-based, and Just Like That-based podcast. I cannot believe what has happened.
Neither can I. How do you feel about his death?
Honestly,
I'm sure you've gone over this on previous episodes, but for the minority of listeners who've done what I did, which is watch the first two and then the last one and have a lot of questions in between.
Look, I'm absolutely sure if he died at the end of the original series, when I was very invested in it, I would have cried for sure. But I think the movies, the taint of the movies, and then coming back into it, I didn't cry, no.
Are we leaving there?
Yeah, I think I'm moved that you cried, and I see why, if you were so blindsided because you were expecting a comic jerk-off scene, and in fact what you got was the death of a character you'd invested many years of your life in.
And well, I hated Big. By the way, I always hated Big. Like, I hated Big the first time around.
Yeah,
I was like not rooting for Carrie and Big to get together at the like end of series six. I think I'm like the only person who wasn't.
I wasn't rooting for them to get back together. Mm. I wanted her to get back together with New York. I wanted it to be about this independent woman who told the Russian to fuck off. And when Big came going, I mean, he didn't do enough at the end of the original SATC for me. He just came and said, Carrie, you're the one.
Yeah.
And yes, that's what she'd asked him to say in season one. But there was no, I've put you through hell and I know you're not going to believe me, but give me another chance. It was just, and then they were just kind of laughing. That was kind of it. And she just sort of accepted him back. And I felt he'd been so, he'd played with her heart so many times. He'd been such a destructive force in her life. And he was never very nice to her.
Never, ever.
Like, he'd say things like, you look like a million bucks, Bradshaw, but he wasn't like, we never really saw what the tenderness between them. So I absolutely understand that magnetic pull back to a toxic person who you have a great sexual chemistry with, and it's so relatable, and I love that that was depicted. I wasn't invested in them getting back together. I wanted her to tell them both to fuck off and come back to New York and marry, you know what I mean? Like be open to be still open to love.
Yeah, I mean, I think because I was a massive fan of the show, which surprises a lot of people, knowing what they know about me. But I'm not that into like high concept drama. Like I can take or leave. Like obviously, like Succession, blah blah blah. Everyone's mad into it at the moment. But like, I think normal relationships between like what are supposed to be pretty naturalistic human beings who aren't living like totally unattainable lives. Obviously, like they live in New York and Carrie Bradshaw manages to have a fucking gorgeous apartment in New York on the basis of one weekly column and blah, blah, blah. But like generally, like apart from all, obviously all of the expense of their life, generally you're supposed to sort of find them pretty relatable people, aren't you?
Yeah. And there are times and for me, she struggles with money or, you know.
Yeah, sure. And I think, The for me, like, because I was talking to my girlfriend about this because she never watched it. She was like, oh, did you like Sex and the City? I'm quite surprised by that. And for me, it was always about the relationship between the four of them. Like, that's the love for me. That's the love between the four women. And, like, I the four friends in the original series. And when you... I agree with you. I wanted the end of the original show to be... She falls back in love in New York, absolutely, but she comes back to those people who are her, you know, ride or dies. They're like her chosen family and like the real, because we all, through six series, they weather various storms of different men and different women and different whatever and different jobs and like, you know, hard times or whatever. That they're the constant, aren't they? They have this love that they have for each other. And I love the way that they depict them falling out and like at various stages across the series, they all have, you know, some really meaningful arguments and hurt goes on between each other. But like they come back to each other because they're the constant foundation. And I always thought that was the heart and soul of the show. And it was a little bit like, I love the way that it ends when she comes back to New York and there's this fantastic, like, obviously one of her fantastic classic Carrie monologues where she's like, you know, the most challenging relationship you'll ever have with yourself, which is, you know, lovely. I think that's what we're saying, isn't it? That's what it should have been. But they kind of made it all about, like, Karen Big are fucking Ross and Rachel are Danny and Sandy are, like, Dawson and Joey. Like, and for me, it was never really about that. It was about the four of them.
Your cultural references are not what anyone would expect. Dawson and Joey.
I mean, that's actually a false. That's a false because Dawson and Joey never end up together. Spoiler alert for anybody still making their way through Dawson's Creek, a TV show that premiered in 1996.
I'm starting to really unpack your song, Nobody Knows I'm a Fraud Now.
Listen, I contain multitudes.
You really do. You contain surprisingly heteronormative multitudes, and I'm loving it. Mm. I'm really loving it. I'm delighted by it. Do you know what I wish? I wish there were queer normative shows that everybody felt as excited by because there was such a variety of shows on the television.
Me fucking too, mate. Yeah.
That'd be nice. Wouldn't it be lovely?
I mean, we've got Feel Good now, to be fair. We've got Feel Good, and everybody knows how fantastic Feel Good is. But for a long time, we were staggering around here in the wilderness of the L word, you know, just trying to make the L word happen just on the strength of lesbian energy. Just constantly telling people it was good when we knew it wasn't.
I mean, if the strength of lesbian energy worked, the world would be a very different place. Now, I'm not saying it never works. I'm saying it hasn't substantially shifted the tidal wave that it should have. Cut that out, Tom. Don't say it. I don't want complaints. Love of an energy isn't good enough for you. I don't want that. I don't want that in my inbox. It's a joke. I'm really starting to relate to Jimmy Carr. Can't say anything anymore.
Can't say anything anymore. You can't do a little bit of Holocaust denial.
I'm sure it wasn't denial.
You've got to do a little bit of targeted hatred of an incredibly marginalised community.
It wasn't Holocaust denial, it was Holocaust endorsement.
That's true, Holocaust endorsement,
A much less rare crime.
That's true, that is true.
It is, I know it's not intended as hate speech. The whole point is it's intended to be the most offensive, shocking thing you could say, and that's the idea of the joke. But it's hard to see how, if it were hate speech, it would sound any different. Now, let's do a wrap-up of what happened this week. So this week, in a Just Like That, the final episode of season one, Carrie attempts to date but is haunted by the poltergeist of Dead Big, who sends her inscrutable Morse code messages through a reading lamp. She can only release her fidelity to her dead husband when she releases his ashes in a couture gown that would look more at home at the Met Ball than on a grieving wife illegally tossing ashes into the Seine. After that, she's free to have a wild snog in an elevator with her dishy producer, who's been lurking in the shadows all series. We saw him there. We saw him. Miranda is invited to California in a strangely manipulative way by J. Diaz, who then announces themselves to be a fucking narcissist. Miranda agrees to go anyway and abandon her Human Rights Watch internship, about which she seems strangely unconflicted, given she gave up her well-paid job to do human rights law. Charlotte insists her non-binary teenager, Rock, has a they mitzvah, but Rock refuses to play ball by not learning their frigging lines, as Anthony refers to a sacred portion of the Torah. Charlotte ignores the trans rabbi, who tells her that Rock is completely unprepared and spends at least 10 grand on a party it's clear they don't want. When Rock declares that they don't identify as Jewish, gendered, or most shocking of all, even a New Yorker, Charlotte decides to step in and be they mitzvahed herself. Minor characters: Jackie gets married, Seema gets laid, Nima gets the same plot she gets every week, and LTW gets a guest spot at the they mitzvah. There are too many secondary characters, so none of them really get anything to do. So that's what happened in this week's And Just Like That.
So, yeah, I have some questions, right? Can I ask you some questions?
We all have some questions, Grace.
Because as I said yesterday, my intention was to binge the entire thing. I watched episode one, Big Died. I watched episode two, Big's Funeral, and I was emotionally not in a strong enough place to continue binging the whole series. So I've watched episodes 1, 2, and 10, right?
Okay, so you don't know what happened. So I've got to fill you in on the series.
Yeah, this is my question. Right, can I guess?
Yes.
Here are some things that I guessed were going to happen over the course of the series, right?
Yes.
Has Miranda identified a drinking problem and stopped drinking?
Yes.
Oh, obviously, okay. I knew Miranda was going to get with Shay Diaz.
Obviously,
I mean, that was pretty obvious from the first moment.
Yeah, they weren't subtle about that.
And Carrie, like, is back in the original apartment. So what happened? What happened to the penthouse? Was she spooked? She didn't want to live there anymore?
Yeah, I mean, ironically, the ghost of Biggs followed her home now. But she just felt empty without him. I guess they'd shared that space and it was just sad. And she just thought, I've got to get out of here. She met an estate agent called Seema, who showed around some fabulous pads. She bought a new fabulous pad, moved in, thought it wasn't for her, and just thought, I'm happy at my old place, what am I doing? And just wanted to be in her cozy old place, but kept the friendship with the estate agent, Seema, who you saw having a shagathon in the final episode.
So, yeah, this woman, I was like, who the fuck is this now? And, like, that was the worst. I was like, in the episodes I've missed, Carrie's made friends with, like, the worst person in the whole world. Does she have any redeeming qualities other than answering the phone while she's, like, in the middle of having sex and then just continuing, but not disconnecting the phone call before the sex has even commenced? I'm not a prude, Deb, right? But I just think, you know, let's
if I'm ever
BRB
getting it on,
you know
I shouldn't
I mean?
Take your call. I should just
yeah,
let it ring.
Not even. Right. Permission granted for if I become sadly bereaved in a non-masturbatory Peloton-related accident. And then when months later, I manage to go on a first date. If I call you and you're in the middle of having sex, that's not a pick-up, this is an emergency situation. That can wait until the morning.
Or, you know? Or here's a thought, pause the sex and say to your partner, I've got to take this. This is a friend in need. So let's pretend we're not having sex right now, or even let's stop having sex.
Or even let's talk. I mean, we've been at it
for 3 days. We could probably afford a break. Mm. Why don't you have a shower? I'll talk to my friend and then we can start up the nookie, but I'm definitely hung up and checked 3 times. Yeah. This is hung up. Now, yeah. Seema has not been, and I think I need to defend Seema here, the worst person in the world. She has been a really good friend to Karen. She's been lovely. I agree with what you're saying. This was indiscreet. If somebody is desperately trying to get back on the horse, back on the peloton, as it were.
Absolutely, yeah.
And is desperately trying to get out, morph from grieving into active loving and sexing, as it were, probably don't, while you're having a 3-day run in the hay, just let them hear your orgasmic noises. However, Seema, for the whole of the season, since she entered it, I think in episode 3, has been trying to find love and jealous of Carrie, who has found love and feels it's better to have loved and lost because she's never had a big love. So
I see.
Just last episode, she got with this guy. And so she's been love and sex starved for a long time. So I think Carrie can be happy for her. So I think we need to take back that Seema's the worst person in the world. She's really not.
Well, sure. Maybe she just needs to do some scheduling work, you know. She just needs to have a time blocked out in her diary for the caviar and the sex. And then time blocked out for phone calls with friends. That. You know, they're not things that mix.
No,
you know?
Listen, noted. And listen, any Grace Petrie friends or fans out there listening, if Grace ever calls you, as excited as you are to receive her call, if you are in the middle of a sexual act, any sort of intercourse or outer course, Grace would like you to call her back.
Outer course?
Is that a word? I just made it up for you because I felt like, I'm being heteronormative by saying intercourse. And I just went, I thought, you know, it could be outer course.
Outer course. Yeah.
Exactly.
That makes me think of like a palate cleanser. You know, you have a fish course, you have an outer course. We're talking about a champagne sorbet here.
I mean, if you've had your fish course.
I've always had my fish course.
Yeah, I mean.
Maybe it's time for some outer course.
That's all I'm saying. You may need a palate cleanser.
You may. Yeah.
So, yes, everything you've thought would happen. Rock is non-binary. Miranda's fallen for Che Diaz. We need to many internet memes because Che Diaz does a stand-up comedy special with no jokes in it. It's just a sort of rabble-rousing TED talk. Oh, queer people. They've been quite an in-your-face character, like turning up at the hospital as Carrie's. I mean, Carrie calls them her boss. But Che Diaz really hosts the podcast that Carrie is a regular guest on. And Che turns up at the hospital when Carrie's having a hip operation. You missed so much, Grace.
Hip operation? Yes, fuck me.
I know.
Jesus Christ.
I know.
They're really driving the point home, aren't they? Like, how old are they meant to be? A hip operation? Well, do me a favour.
I know. But they said it was a congenital thing. So it's not an old lady thing. But then why is it happening? Anyway. Che Diaz turns up at the hospital and Carrie's like, no, I don't want to see anyone. Like, she needs help getting to the loo. So Miranda heads Che off at the pass and ends up, and this is the most famous scene, and if you've heard bits about it, you may have the impression that Miranda masturbated into a Diet Snapple bottle. However, what really happened, mm-hmm. Grace, mm-hmm. is that while Carrie was in bed needing help to go to the loo, and it was Miranda's shift to help nurse her, Che Diaz came around, again, slightly strangely inserting themselves into a colleague's life by just turning up at the door. Miranda had an extreme sexual experience with them up against Carrie's kitchen counter, and Carrie could see it, I think through the wardrobe off a mirror or something, and was trying at first to let Miranda know she was there and then just stopped, but she couldn't get to the loo, so she had to pee in a Diet Snapple bottle. And they had a fight about it because Carrie was like, what are you doing? You're married. And she said, well, it was the best experience of my life. I don't care. I am sorry. I did it in your kitchen while I was meant to be helping you to the loo, and you've now tipped a bottle of pee over all your sheets. That bit I am sorry for. I'm not sorry for the sex, but it was just very weird because...
I don't think we need to go because. I think it was just very weird. I think I can sort of gather all the ways that it was weird. The weirdness is sort of evident. But go on. It was just sort of weird because...
Well, yeah. The whole thing was weird because no one ever referenced that in the movies, which maybe even the Sex and the City people don't think are canon, I don't know. In the movie, Steve cheated on her and she was brutal about it. And no one's ever said to her, but when Steve cheated on you, even though he did it once, was immediately confessional and very contrite, you've carried on an affair for 3 months and have never expressed any confliction about it. You're just like, you just told him and were jubilant immediately. And you only told him when Che forced your hand. So it's right, all okay. been strange. Miranda seems like a different person to me. So let's get to this week's episode. Opening scene, the podcast. I find this podcast very strange because it has callers. That isn't a podcast, that's internet radio.
Well, I was just about to say, from what I can glean of this TV show, Carrie Bradshaw is millennial Frasier. That's what seems to be happening.
Yes. Yes.
She's calling it, people are calling in, she, you know, also my favourite, I mean, I'm skipping ahead, but my favourite thing is like, she's been on this journey, she's got comfortable with podcasting, Che's leaving town so she gets given her own podcast, and the happy ending is somebody calls in floods of tears and Carrie just goes, oh, I don't know. And that's it. That's like, we're supposed to be like, wow, our girls come good. It's like, no, she sucks at this. Yeah. She's quite bad at this. I'm happy she's filling her time in between hip replacements, but like, what are we up to? They need someone more qualified.
Oh, it's so true. And she's back to Sex and the City, which is a strange... I actually love that her podcast is called Sex and the City, but it is a little strange that when she did her column, she did have lots of answers and lots of explorations. And now she's just like, I don't know, but with love, anything's possible. And then the caller goes, thank you so much, that's really helped. And I'm like, how and why?
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And then she says to the producer, I'm not very good at this. And he says, you'll get better. And I'm like, you better get better fast. And... Also, what's the podcast with callers? Podcasts can't have callers. That's internet radio that maybe, yeah. I guess, you can put on and listen again. That's not a podcast. What they're thinking of, Michael Patrick King doesn't know what a podcast is. He doesn't listen to podcasts. But what they're thinking of is a podcast like Sarah Silverman's, where she gets voice notes, which a lot of people do now, voice notes, sure. emails. They play the voice note and then they respond to that. But no one has callers because it would be so complicated.
That's not a podcast.
It's not.
That's just not a podcast.
You know the tech faff that we have to do to both get on this. You'd have to do that with every caller. And they wouldn't have their headphones. It would go so wrong. And they'd have to be scheduled in for a time when you were recording. It would just not be possible. So this
it's interesting. It's interesting that you say Mark Patrick King doesn't know what podcasts are, because that is such a strong theme, isn't it? Having only seen 3 episodes of this new version of the show... there are so many weird, what a choice it is to make Carrie's main job something that you, the creator, just are not familiar with, just don't understand.
But if you want to do that, there's a line in the podcasts.
Well, that's what I mean, but there's a line in the first episode where, like, again, I feel like they're sort of flailing around trying to place the women in age. Like, what, do you know what I mean? Because they're, like, sort of carrying on the same way they used to do, but then there's these really clunky bits of, like, by the way, we're 1,000,000 years old now. And, like, none of it seems very naturalistic. And there's a line in, like, the first episode where Carrie's like, oh, you know, you've never listened to the podcast. And Miranda's like, listen, I draw the line at podcasts. Like, podcasts is this newfangled technology. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, people listen to... No, I'm sorry. I call bullshit. Like... Miranda listens to This American Life every week. Like, the character of Miranda, like she's into podcasts.
Yeah.
What a strange thing to be like, I draw the line at podcasts. Like, draw what line? What are we saying? Like, podcasts are like two newfangled foreign technology that having been around all of fucking 20 years?
But also, Miranda was always the technological one. She was the one that had a Palm Pilot, was trying to show everyone. She was the one who carried up the wedding, was like, I can't use your iPhone. She was a she's a corporate lawyer. It seems
days. She carries, you know, 10 books around because she's anti-Kindle. Like, what is this?
Just not who she was. Carrie, I would believe, would be like, I don't like Kindles. Carrie liked pages. Carrie resisted getting a mobile phone. Has she a rotary phone? Carrie, I would believe. But Miranda, no, that's not possible. And she would have definitely been into Serial, all those early, really big podcasts. And she would have feminist podcasts she'd listen to. If she's that into intersectional feminism that she's left her corporate law job to become a human rights lawyer, you better believe she listens to podcasts. It's impossible. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, where's she got all these influences from?
So no, she draws the line at podcasts.
It's such a strange thing. But then also, podcasts don't do breakfast radio buttons that make, like, this is like Michael Patrick's memory of 80s breakfast radio, where, you know, it was Taylor and the boy. And wow. And so that's what the woke button is. Woke alert button.
I'm my name is Stereo Mike. Old school. Cowabunga.
Once in Family Guy, the baby character, Stewie. And the dog got their own breakfast radio show that was called Dingo and the Baby. And it was only made up of those sounds. So it was it was just them pushing those buttons, those breakfast radio buttons. The whole thing was made up of those. And it reminded me a bit of that. It's like a parody of what a man like Michael Patrick King, who does draw the line at podcasts, clearly.
Clearly. I think he draws the line several hundred metres before podcasts, from what I can glean.
It's like, I listened to 80s breakfast radio for a year. I didn't like it. I imagine it's that. Let's play that out. And nobody said to him, hey, Michael, that's nothing like a podcast. And it's just, it's also the kind of scripted way it's interacted. They actually probably should have let them ad lib a little bit in that, because their podcast has to sound ad libbed. People have to talk over each other. People have to do this.
Exactly.
It's not these like crisp sound bites.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I find the guy who's on the podcast with Carrie and Che, Jackie, this is going to sound quite problematic, so by all means do cut it out. But watching the whole thing, I'm probably repeating what maybe other people have said before, but it really does feel as though they have sort of listened to the criticisms of how, you know, white and like straight-laced and quite heteronormative and very non-diverse the original series was. But in trying to correct that, to me, it really does feel like Carrie, Miranda and Charlotte are like normal people and all of these other people are just like mad aliens trying to make genderqueer they mitzvahs happen that they don't even want. And then, like, I don't know. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
it's just like, look, you don't, like, not everybody has to be like an actual, not every like diverse character has to just be like a walking advert for their own fucking like audition for the role. Like, not everyone is like carrying their own fucking character profile around, which is like, I don't know. Like, I just felt like there was a few sort of very like conspicuous references in this episode to like, Jackie was like, I meant to invite you to this party, which we now find out later is his wedding, but like my executive function, I don't know, it just sort of feels a bit like they're just trying to like stamp the bingo card, you know?
Yeah, I'm dropping in that I'm neurodiverse as we walk down the street. Because I need to tick another box quickly because somebody said we haven't covered neurodiverse people. I am, and let's keep walking. And yeah, it's, there are too many new characters because none of them really get an arc.
No.
And the characters that are there have to carry a number of intersectional boxes and juggle those boxes. And I want to see, the thing is, I want to see Rock be more than non-binary. I would love it if Rock were non-binary and going through something at school that wasn't about non-binariness.
Well, exactly. That's sort of, that's what I was going to say is that...
I understand they're wanting to deal with it. It's something we haven't seen a lot of on screen. I do think it's interesting to see someone as femme as Charlotte deal with her daughter being non-binary. But once we've dealt with that, can Rock be going about something, doing something, going through something beyond non-binariness? And I feel like each of those characters, LTW, is there to filter blackness to Charlotte. And there's a, let's talk about this episode. I found the opening podcast, they're all talking about their worst breakup. I got broken up with on FaceTime. And then I can't remember what Jackie says. I got broken up with.
A girl got COVID to break up with me, right. I think is his.
Okay, so I'll just take that again. So that's not so messy and sounds more like their podcast, Dingo and the Baby.
boing.
8 a.m. Wiki wiki. So Jackie says, oh, a girl got COVID to break up with me, which I don't know how long ago that was because he's marrying someone else now.
I mean, like, COVID's only been around 2 years. Who's this broad he's marrying? Have they just got together?
I mean, listen, people get married fast at times.
I guess.
Then I got broken up with on FaceTime. And then Carrie, we were all shouting at the screen, we know the story she's going to tell. What was her worst breakup? Were you shouting
at the
screen?
It was the post-it note.
I got broken up with on a post-it.
I'm sorry. I can't. Don't hate me. Yeah.
Oh, I was so excited. I was like, oh, a bit of nostalgia. Yeah. But instead she says the only thing she said the whole series, which is Big died. I was like, I can't.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I need more than this grief. And I'm like, of course in real life, if you're grieving, it's all you can think about and all you can talk about. But I really needed the writers to cut to a point where we could see Carrie have some joy. And really, they cut to it in the last frame of the last episode. And I'm like, now we've got to wait for season two, should we get a season two, to see her date, have joy, have sex for the first time with someone beyond her marriage. I was like, please let her reminisce about that poster, because that would have been glorious to see. Because that's what we were all shouting at the screen. I can't believe any Sex and the City watcher wasn't shouting, broken up with on a poster. Anyway, so I felt that
I think, as we said about Miranda and the Kindle and the books and the podcast thing, so did you watch Generation Q, the L Word reboot?
No.
So there's a Auto Shuttle do a recap podcast of that, in which they have opined with, I think, good evidence to do so, that the writers of the reboot never watched the original show. And I think that's, if it wasn't Michael Patrick King, I would say, like, have any of these people ever heard of Sex and the City? Have they ever had a little look at a show called Sex and the City? Because Miranda's a totally different person. And yes, Carrie has the biggest, like, you know, it's
a great
famous
story.
Like, and decades later, people are still referencing Broke Up With on a post-it.
And that's a great story and a charming story to bring to a podcast. And sort of like in my day, there was no FaceTime, you know, that kind of when I was out there sort of, you know, doing all of this stuff and I got broken up with a post-it. It's a great, it's a sort of, here's this nonsense reference. It would have been so cute. And the listeners already know that her husband died. You cannot be bringing that sadness every week to your podcast. You have to be bringing your life experience. And I just didn't buy, I don't mind her saying broken up with a post-it, everyone, ah, but actually I'll have to say my recent breakup was worse. That's
sure.
Then that's a funny capper, you know, that sort of like, you know, listen, until you've been broken up with by death, you don't know. I thought I'd had the worst breakup, turns out I hadn't. Then that's a funny capper. But it just felt just this unrelenting sadness again. I mean, if we are blessed slash cursed with a season two, I don't know which it is. I feel like I'm in now. I'm in. And I do want to see what I've been promised. So I kind of do want a season two. But
sure.
Also I'm like, please, can we have some of this snappy dialogue back of the Sex and the City was all about the wit and the dialogue. And like dialogue, like even though the show's ending, Che's leaving. So the podcast is being wound up. And Carrie says, can I still come back here for the free Pringles? Like anyone believes that Carrie Bradshaw eats Pringles.
And yeah. And
I mean, she doesn't. Just, she's not a Pringles.
That's just a very lame... I don't want to be like unduly unkind, but that there's just a lot of jokes in it that just don't land for me. That's just not that's like back of a fag packet writing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, oh, can I still come in for the free Pringles? It's like
we've never seen her eat Pringles ever. What's can
and also is that what she would say? She was like, she's so witty. Like she has something better to come up with than that. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I just found that kind of thing very flat. Then she goes out for lunch with the brother of her late husband, who we have never seen before or I believe heard of before. He's just...
Before this episode?
Yeah, as far as I know...
Oh, he's at the funeral. He turns up at Big's funeral, yeah. But I remember thinking Big had a brother because I don't think he was ever referenced before that.
Well, also Big had a long-lasting EA, like a PA, who was so mourning at the funeral and sort of centred herself at the funeral. We'd never seen her before. I thought,
I was going mad because I was like, I don't remember this woman at all.
I thought like she was presented like someone we knew and loved. And then I thought, really? She's going to be in this season and look, we just have to sort of mentally go, well, we just never saw this side of Big's life. Never been seen again post the Will
meeting.
Wow. But she was so centred at the funeral that I thought either I've forgotten her. And I thought, I know I haven't, but maybe there was one episode that I just somehow missed or I've never watched a second time. I said, no, she doesn't exist.
Not at all.
And she was there for the will reading and we've just never seen from again. It was such a strange decision. And so John's brother, Big's brother, comes back and it's very strange. He says, where's John? And she says, he goes, no, I mean, where are his remains? Well, that's not what you'd say. You don't say to a grieving wife, so where's your husband?
You
thought about what we might do with John's ashes?
Yeah, I will say it's a TV trope I hate. I, fortunately, at this point in my life, I have never been in possession of anybody's ashes yet. But do people in real life refer to the ashes by the name of the person who has died? Because it's a TV trope that I hate. They do it. I see it in all kinds of shows. It's like, wow, what are we going to do with Paul? Like, it's really been 2 months. We must do something about Paul. We've got to find a place to put Paul. I just don't think I haven't heard people do it in real life.
No.
I'm sure there will be exceptions to the rule. So do email me if I've got that wrong. Don't really. I'm sorry for your loss.
In my experience, that sounded so sincere. Grace Petrie is not sorry for your loss.
I don't think you call the ashes by the name. I think you might say, what are we going to do with Paul's ashes? I don't know why I've made this.
No, in my experience, you say the name of the loved one. In my family, certainly, you'd say, are we scattering grandma's ashes?
Sure.
We wouldn't say, are we going to drop grandma in the park?
Yeah. Where's grandma? Where's grandma at the moment? You know, she's on the shelf in Deb's closet, apparently, you know?
You certainly wouldn't say that to the grieving wife. It's so jarring.
No.
And then he offers some kind of family plot. And then How did you feel about, that was so strange, how did you feel about the flashing lamp that she was communicating with being through a lamp?
I mean, it was no trippier than anything else that happened in this show. But yeah, I was at various points, I was like, what is happening? Like, there was one of the points was the lamp, because again, like, broadly speaking, from my memory, Sex and the City was not a supernatural show. It was based in relatable, attainable, accessible reality. But this is just a fact. And it was never, first, I thought it was going to be, so she got the lamp fixed. And I thought it was going to be like, you know, she comes to terms with the fact that she was seeing what she wanted to see. It helps her bring this resolution. She, you know, has the dream about Paris. But it wasn't that, because then after the lamp was fixed, it's still supposed to be big, and we're supposed to just, it's like the show is offering that up as like, that's fact.
It's a very mad decision.
I think it's a possibility, but it's what we're supposed to take from it, I think, isn't it? Because even after the lamp was fixed and the wire is replaced,
Carrie and
the writers are like looking down the barrel and being like, this is the conclusion, right? It is big.
Yeah.
Which is a choice, you know?
It's a polterbeat.
A mad choice.
It's a polterbig, and it isn't, as you say, a supernatural show. The only thing, because on this show, I like to find echoes and shadows and callbacks from the original series. And a lot of the listeners, upward of 12 listeners, have said that they've enjoyed that, and that's what they look forward to. The only thing I can equate this to is when Miranda thinks she has a ghost because she can hear someone upstairs, and the janitor lets her in and there's no one up there. And she's scared of her own death and starts having panic attacks and overfeeds her cat because the story is that the last woman who lived in that flat died and the cat ate her face. And so this became a thing about single women. It was all about Miranda buying a flat as a single woman and check the single woman box. And so that's the only thing I can equate it to. I can't remember any other supernatural implications or anything. But in this, Miranda becomes a little bit more Miranda-y for once in the cafe, where she goes, come on, we don't believe in the afterlife. Aren't we on the same page? But it's at a time which is a little bit strangely tactless for the new, more compassionate Miranda 2.0. Because actually,
yeah,
if your friend's partner has died and they go, I mean, I don't know. I maybe think differently now. Big's died. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I'm an undecided.
Like, allow
don't
it.
Go, oh, come on. Like, yeah.
It was tactless, but it wasn't as tactless as what I thought she was going to say, which is that Charlotte says, you think Big is communicating from heaven? And Miranda goes, heaven? And like, the reveal is that she's like, there's no such thing as heaven. But I really thought she was going to be like, don't we think Big's in hell? Which, like, I think Big's in hell. Big did some dreadful things. You know? I thought that's
guys
where she
like
was going.
That.
Like, did you mean heaven?
Guys like that always talk the way into heaven, though, don't they?
Oh, jeez.
You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, you know.
Like, when do they ever get their fall? They know people. Big knows people. He can get it. He'll be at the VIP suite in heaven, for fucking sure. If we know how the world works, why would we think the afterworld would be any different? I thought that was very strangely tactless for new Miranda. I think even old Miranda would have been a little bit kinder and saying,
yeah.
Look, Carrie, I know it can be comforting, but I feel like maybe this is a manifestation of guilt that's holding you back from living your life, and I think you need to work past it. So then she has the dream, which I think they were going to shoot a flashback of Chris Noth in that dream sequence on the bridge, but instead they just had his voice because they didn't want to bring him back. Because
was that after all the stuff?
Yeah, because they didn't want to bring him back after all the
stuff.
Oh, wow, interesting. So the original episode one was filmed before women came out and with their testimonials about Chris Noth. They were going to do a flashback scene with him or a dream sequence with him, and then they decided against it for obvious reasons.
Right.
So we just heard his voice on the bridge, which might have been old footage that they reused. And then she went and she scattered the ashes in an implausible ball gown. Now, what I was thinking, and I understand it's Sex and the City and it's escapism and it's couture and it's fun, but I was just imagining her, presumably staying at the George Sank Hotel or somewhere like that, very fancy in Paris, getting dressed, getting her hair done by a professional, because that was a professional updo. And I know this because Sarah Jessica Parker has said on Sex and the City, she always said the women have got to be able to do their hair the way they could do it. She said she never wanted her hair to look done unless she was going to an event. She said if it was a red carpet thing, yeah, I would go and get my hair done. So she didn't mind if it was for a special occasion. But day to day, just them brunching in New York and things, she said, I always said it's got to look like I could do it myself. So I know that she had an updo done in Paris. She went to a fancy salon. She carted that in a suitcase, like a massive suitcase, that ball gown. She dressed herself up. She put her makeup on. She walked to a bridge. She scattered the ashes off. She sent
a text. You missed something out. What? She transferred the ashes into an Eiffel Tower-shaped clutch bag. Because that's what you do, man, when you're bereaved. What? That was the most unhinged thing I've ever, ever, ever seen, right? Femme fashion, I agree, is not my strong point. But an Eiffel Tower concertinering out to reveal the ashes of Big. I was done. I was like, what is happening?
I actually laughed out loud when I saw her in that orange ball gown with the Eiffel Tower box. I was like, because that Eiffel Tower Da Monte box, now I'm sure it is some fancy designer, but it at least is parodying the kind of thing you might see in a Montmartre, like really tacky souvenir shop. Like it's the kind of thing that somebody's mum buys their teenage daughter. It's like, it's the Eiffel Tower, honey. You know, it's like... Yeah. It's tacky, really tacky. So presumably it is some ridiculous designer, maybe an On Your Hind Marsh or something like that, but it's parodying that. It's parodying a souvenir. I mean, I know you're a Sex and the City fan. You will know your labels. But I'm looking at it just going, in what world? Like now she walks down to the bridge, she scatters the ashes. She sends Samantha a text. And then what does she do? You can't go out. Where are you going to go in that? You look like you're going to the Met Gala. So presumably you have to just go back to the hotel, take it off and go to bed. It's just...
Well, everything about that scene... Everything about that scene was so mad. But not least because, like, I mean, I just watched it before we started recording. But the editing is so mad. Like, we go from the they mitzvah to, like, there's no time. There's no Carrie goes to the airport. There's no Carrie gets off the plane. There's no Carrie checks into the hotel. There's no Carrie gets her ball gown out. There's no, it's literally just like, one second she's in New York and the next second she is wearing the strangest gloves I've ever seen with that dress as well. And she's just wandering down the bridge and it's like, oh, wow, okay. So that's it. I guess we went. And the editing of the entire last, like, 5 minutes is so mad. It's like bang, 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 bang. And so then, you know, before you know it, we're just, like, kissing the producer in the elevator, which I have some things to say about, by the way.
Okay, great.
Well, all right. Am I skipping ahead?
No. I think we've covered it. It would upstage your private moment so much because people would be staring at you. Everyone would be walking down the street in jeans and a T-shirt or, you know, your average night out clothes. And people would absolutely stare at you if you were doing that. Like, it would bring you so much unwanted attention in that moment. I know it's Sex and City, but it's like a parody of itself. It's like a French Saunders sketch of Sex
and
City.
That was it, I think. That's the problem. Like, that jarring mad cut to... Suddenly she's on the bridge in Paris and she looks like that and she's got the Eiffel Tower bag full of ashes. John. That was feel like a comedian's take on Sex and the City.
So I could just imagine Dawn French doing it.
This episode with Grace Petrie is a two-parter because we went on that long. So see you soon for part two. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist, Watchers and Just Like That with me, Deborah Frances White, and my very special guest, Grace Petrie. The producer for The Spontaneity Shop was Tom Selinsky. The Guilty Feminist is part of the Acast Creator Network, and Just Like That is on HBO Max in the United States and Sky Comedy and now in the UK.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.